The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
Well, you know what? It's time to go drag racing! 200 plus miles per hour!
And welcome back to another edition of Straight Lining with Stevie. This is we've been gone for a minute, but we're back. And Stevie, how you doing there tonight, man?
Oh, Guy, I'm doing absolutely marvelous. It's just a good feeling to get back home. I've been on the road a lot, and finally get to be back on the show again. So I'm excited about it.
All right, where have you been for the last month?
Well, you could have seen me at Pomona. You could have seen me at Vegas. You could have seen me in Winston-Salem. I did a double out in Pomona. I did a double out in Vegas. I did the finals for the All-Harley Drag Racing Association out there, and I also did their banquet as well. So it's been a busy period. In fact, I have a very understanding wife. I actually came home after 21 days, and I saw the wife for about a total of 12 hours, which I slept 8. She had suitcases waiting on me. I jumped in the car from the airplane and poof, went off to do another race up in Winston-Salem. But now the season's over.
Awesome, Stevie. And I tell you, you know, for people that might be new, their first time listening to the show, what we do is, the first half hour, we talk to a couple of guys who go down the drag strip with some doors on their machines, and then we switch over and talk all Harley drags. And I think we're going to get right to it here, Stevie. We got some pretty good guests on here tonight.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got a guy right now. Now, no doors on this machine now. We have to make that perfect.
Well, that's true, too.
This is the Noah Gas Tarco Racing Fuels Pro Nitro Top Fuel World Champion, Bruce Litton. Bruce, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Steve. How you doing?
Oh, just absolutely marvelous. Cool. Nice to have a chance to talk with you. So, here you are. I've read several articles that you and Susan Lucci were having a contest to see who could be second the most. And by golly, you broke that string. That took it to them this time. You've really been out there in drag racing for quite a few years running the nitro scene. And third and second place seem to come to you every year. Just at the very end, something would happen for whatever reason. You just couldn't quite make it over that hump. But it happened this year. Tell me all about how the season went for you this year.
Well, it was an awesome season. We've been doing this now. This is my 12th, I guess about my 12th season, I think, in Top Fuel. And we've had good teams all through the years, like you had mentioned, and we've had great cars. And there's been, it seems like it's always been something, we've won some races, but then, turn around, something just, it wasn't meant to be, so to speak. So this year, I made my mind up that we was going to, we're going to have a good year, I actually ordered a new car on my birthday back last December, and so I was going to go with a new car, and kind of went back together and started talking to a lot of the guys that was originally with me on the original team, and I got quite a few of my original teammates back from the crew members from my first early years in Top Fuel. So it was a neat deal. These guys. They worked good together. We had a new car and had good equipment, it was just one of those years where everything just really went well for us. And we started out with right off the bat with a win at the very first race, and it made me feel like things was going to be really good. So we went through the season where there was several good cars in nitro, forced to. I think we ended up being in 5 finals, and we won 3 of them. TJ Zizzle, he was there at every step. He was if I wasn't leading the points, he led the points. And matter of fact, he had a points lead on me in going into the final by 26 points. What it was, and we just had an awesome race at the last race, and Carm performed well, and we won that race, and won the championship.
It seems like this was your year then. It just started off absolutely awesome down in Texas initially, and you were always in the hunt. But TJ Sizzle, he gave you a run for the money, though, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And TJ's a great guy, and he's got a great team. And, And, you know, it's, like I said before, there's several good teams out here, and any one of them could have won it this year. And this is my 10th year being sponsored by Lucas Oil, and they've always been real good to me. And, you know, what can you say about them? You know, they're a quality product with even more quality people that's developing this oil and stuff. And it's just a great company, and they stuck with me. And that meant a lot to me that they – you know, they backed me this long, and Torker Race Fuels, they've been with me for 3 or 4 years. So it was just kind of a neat deal where everything came together, and it was just, we were just blessed. That's about the best way to say it.
Well, you know, I know you had a great season and everything, and you were on your game every single race. But I understand you slipped on your way home when you were getting ready to pull in the driveway. You missed something.
Yeah, we took our time coming home. We took basically an extra day to get home, and we went in a hurry. And my wife had called me, said, you know, what time are you going to be here? And I said, you know, I was telling her it was going to be here finally Tuesday afternoon. And as we was pulling into the shop, we got the semi. I was in the semi, and we would come around the corner. And I always, you know, try to watch my corners and make sure we turned the corner. Well, she had made a huge sign. It was, I think the sign was 16 foot long, and it said, congratulations, you know, Bruce Litton Racing, iTree Top Fuel Champion. And she had all these signs up and these banners and everything. I missed it. I missed the whole thing. I looked at the truck and trailer as it was going around the corner, and I was looking the opposite direction. And when I come in the back door, she said, well, what do you think? I said, well, I think about what? So she said,
well,
you
had
fine.
A fantastic season to end the doghouse no sooner than you pulled in the driveway.
Yeah. So I actually walked outside the fence and looked out, stood out there on the corner, looked at it, and it was pretty neat. She took the time to get these signs put up. Her and my daughter Heather went out in the rain and hung these signs on the fence, and it was a real neat deal. I was tickled that she did that for me.
Yeah, it was really sweet, but it's hard to believe. Here's the guy. You got to remember, this guy can literally feel the green bulb about to come on because you race against a pro tree, and he drives home, pulls in his driveway, and misses a 16-foot banner. Shame on you!
Yeah, that's true. And to my defense was that it was in front of me, but in the dragster, I never looked behind me. This time, I was looking behind me in the mirror. So,
well, that's pretty good. That's kind of really a cute story, you know. I say, well, you apparently have a wonderful wife, really care.
Oh yeah, yeah. Carol Lively, we've been married 30 years, and she's been with me through the good times, and she's been through the tough times when I've had a couple of crashes and stuff, and she's always been there for me. And at the banquet, when I was giving my acceptance speech, I told everybody that the reason I do this, I do it for her. You know, I do it this racing all for her, which we all know better than that. And Aaron and Colburn and Scooter, they was paying attention. They, instead of giving me the check, they took the check over and handed it to Carol. Said, since you do it for her, I guess this is her check.
Very good. Talk about crashes. The last one you had, you rode down the guardrail, if I'm not mistaken. Can you give us a little bit of just what happened in that crash at the time?
Well, that crash there was... that was September of last year. It was in the semifinals at New Hampshire, and I was running Bobby Lugano. And the car happened to smoke the tires at the head of the throttle, and so did he. And what I was trying to do was just trying to get to the finish line, and we was both pedaling, and just got out. Basically, the car just got away from me about somewhere around 1,000 foot, and hit the wall really hard. It just destroyed the car. And then they rode the guard wall all the way down, you know, for another, you know, well, I say 700, maybe 1,000 foot after that. I don't know. It was a long ways.
You were actually up on the guard wall going down the track then, under power.
Under power. And, you know, then it knocked the wheels off of it. It drug it so hard, it knocked the wheels off of it. And it just rode on the guard wall. And I cracked my skull and broke my nose, and I broke my elbow, and my shoulder, my right shoulder, went through the seat, through the mag body, and it actually got drugged on the guard wall, so I had to have two surgeries on my shoulder to have a skin graft and kind of pull the muscle away a little bit. But you know, believe me, I was hurting when they got there. I don't remember anything about it. I don't remember anything about the crash at all. I remember pedaling the car, and I remember being flown to the lifeline to the Boston Hospital. But other than that, I don't really remember too much about the crash. Seen it on TV. I seen it on TV. I don't like to watch crashes, but I can watch that because I know how the outcome was. I survived it. So, but you know, it was a tough time, and it had a lot of rehabilitation to go through, and got to come back about 5 weeks later, and I run Rockingham the last race last year, and just to make sure that I still felt all right and still drive the car and stuff. And we built a new car because the only thing we saved off that car was the left front wheel, the fuel line, and the floorboard. Other than that, the car was junk.
Holy smokes.
You know, Stevie, I was just looking on, I was on Bruce's website here, and it was reminding me of 8,000 horsepower, right, Bruce?
That's correct.
You know, we talked to Doug Rose, who had the Green Mamba. He has a Green Mamba jet car. He's been riding around since like 69 or something. That's got a jet engine in it, and that's only like 7,500 horse. What's it like sitting in that powerhouse? What's that like to just like us mere mortals?
Yeah, it's awesome. I've been fortunate enough. I've been racing, you know, all my life, and I've raced quite a few things. I've even raced top fuel motorcycles, but these cars here, the power is just awesome. The car weighs with me in it somewhere right around about 2,340 pounds. So, but you know, my body weight's basically about 225. But the car accelerates so hard that it carries 5 G's. The computer shows, you know, we have a G meter in the car. I actually weigh 1,150 pounds in the car under acceleration.
Oh,
wow!
So
it has one more G than the space shuttle. So it's pretty awesome. It runs 100 mile an hour the first 60 feet and 8/10 of a second from a dead stop, and you know, it runs 275 mile an hour just a tick over 3 seconds in the 8th mile.
The 329.18 miles per hour. Is there a limit here? What is the limit?
Well, I think we're getting pretty close to it. I think that you look at it as the weak link in the chain. You know, there's always something that's trying to go wrong with these cars, and I think that, you know, the tires and the chassis design, I think it's going to be just about it. You know, there's a few cars that run 330s, you know, in the mid 330s and stuff, and we were fortunate enough. I think we set like 3 or 4 track records this year, just in mile an hour, and my car's been pretty good this year about running some really good mile an hour on the top end, but I look for this. That's going to be. I don't see that having to go much faster than that because it's just unbelievable. You know, the wings we use in these cars, we've got 2,000 pounds of downforce on the front and 6,000 pounds of downforce on the back. So you're actually just chaining these cars basically theoretically to the ground, trying to keep them from flying away. So I just think that, you know, with the tire design that we use now and with the way everything's built, I think we're getting back to the point, just to the point where safely that's going to be about the fastest mile you're going to see on a piston-driven car, anyway.
Well, what do you think is the future as far as the chassis and stuff? I've seen a lot of articles, Bruce, about they want to enclose the cockpit completely, and they're talking about. I know John Force has done a lot to modify on the funny cars, the cages. Do you foresee the possibility of a fuel dragster being enclosed completely down the road?
You know, it's not out of the question. I foresee them going to change the design of the way we run the cars now. A few years back, we tried to we used some of these cars that was basically in a carbon fiber cockpit. You know, your feet and it was like a a capsule, you know, so to speak, and I really think they're going to probably end up going that way, where the driver is completely enclosed in a cocoon, and you know, to make it safe. You know, these things are dangerous, and you know, I've tested it too many times myself. You know, and I've been fortunate enough to I've survived them, and you know, you just gonna have to be safety first, and the competition is there, and no matter what Molinar they go, or no matter what speed they go, I think everybody, you know, there's just gonna be good competition, even if they slow them down. There's a lot of smart crew chiefs out there, and they seem like they always figure out a way to make them go faster and faster, even when they take fuel out of them, and when they restrict them in certain ways. But I tell you what, they seem like they always, you know, crew chiefs, you know, are pretty smart guys that can bring a lot of horsepower to the ground.
Well, you know, that was one of the things that I was going to mention about slowing them down, and just how could they actually slow it down without the crew chiefs finding the little nicks and crannies to pull the power back out of them. I know that they've taken a lot of the overdrive away. They've changed the percentage of nitro. They've gone up, down, gear ratio. But somehow, some way, they still continue to accelerate at a rapid pace.
I think the secret right now to these cars making so much horsepower is the fuel pumps that we run on them. We run fuel pumps to pump 100 gallons of fuel in 60 seconds. And at 500 pounds of fuel pressure, it's unbelievable how much fuel these cars can. You know, you can push them through the motor, and if they're going to slow them down, they're going to do it by, you know, restricting the size of the fuel pump or how much. We run two magnetos. It takes two magnetos to fire this much fuel. If you take one magneto away from them, you know, it's going to really slow them down. But you know, it's just a matter of testing. Whatever comes like a good idea on paper, after a few of these guys get out here and test, they figure it out, and then we're on to something else.
But you know, you just mentioned about the fact that you use how many gallons of fuel?
The fuel pump that I have on my car will pump 100 gallons of fuel in 60 seconds at 500 pounds of fuel pressure. Now, that's at wide-open throttle. You know, we're only at wide-open throttle for a little over 4 seconds. I have a 17-gallon fuel tank on the car. That's the fuel tank, and it has 2.5 gallons of fuel in the lines because the lines are so big. So basically, I get a little over 19 gallons in the car. From the time we start the car up, do the burnout, do the run, including warm-up, the car will use 17 gallons of fuel.
Wow. Okay.
That's incredible. How big are, you know, when you think about, you said about fuel lines, you know, the average guy out there, he drives his Toyota down the highway and he's got quarter-inch fuel line. If you got a Chevrolet V8, you may have a 3/8 fuel line. How big of lines do you have on there? Do you know what size?
Yeah, two and a half inch diameter.
Holy cow. That's like sewer pipe.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big fuel line. And it runs from the front to the back. We run the fuel tank in the front of the car, so the car arches, you know, going down the track. So every 5 feet, we've got a rubber connection in it, so that the fuel line will flex.
How long? What is the wheelbase? I should say, I guess, on your dragster.
300 inches.
100 inches. Was there any advantage of making them safer by perhaps going to a longer wheelbase or something?
No, like I don't believe so. Actually, it's 300 inches on the long side. We stagger the wheelbase. It's 300 inches on the long side and 298 inches on the short side. The reason we do that is because the car gets a little bit better rollout, which makes it a little quicker going down the track. You actually get a 2-inch run head start at the starting line, and I think 300 inches, that's a pretty long car, so I don't really foresee them making it any longer. You know, they drive good. They drive really real good.
Hey Stevie, it is rocket science.
I love it. It drives really good. How much time have you got to drive it? 4.5 seconds. You know. Holy cow! And at that point, you're driving 4.5 seconds. You get to drive this thing, and you weigh 1,100 pounds. I mean, your arms and stuff just can't move around very easily now.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, your crew chief, they must think we can drive them pretty good, because there's been many of the time right before we start the car, I mean, we're talking, you know, 2 or 3 seconds before we start the car, the crew chief will focus head in the roll cage and say, keep it in the groove. And you go out and look at the groove, and the groove is barely wider than the car. And you know, that's a lot of times Richard Hartman, which he was one of my crew chiefs, he'll say, move it over 4 inches in the groove. Oh, okay. And
in the first 100 feet.
No, he wants it moved over 4 inches, like at 300. He'll pick a spot at 330 feet, move it over 4 inches in the groove. He'll drive out of the groove, so pull it over 4 inches in the groove.
So by this time, your helmet, you're literally pasted to the seat. The G meter's kicked over 5, and he says, "How about move it over 4 more inches? Not 5, but 4."
So evidently the car must drive good then, huh?
Either that or you've got arms of steel. Wow.
Yeah, so no, it would every track is different, and you can physically see the groove on the racetrack, and these cars move around, but you know, you can guide them. I think the word guide would probably be a better word to use than drive. You hope they go where you want them to.
You know, most guys are used to driving a car that has a regular distributor, and you talked about magnetos, in fact, running two magnetos, and they have, 44 amps per magneto?
Yeah, two 44-amp magnetos.
So if you grab that thing, you could kiss it all goodbye.
It would make your hair stand straight up for a good while, you know, if it didn't do that. So it takes a lot of mag to fire that much fuel. The cylinders are actually drowned with fuel in them, and they're trying to fire liquid. That's all you know. It's not vaporized at all. It's liquid. And what's neat about nitromethane, the reason it makes so much power is it carries oxygen in the liquid form. So you know, you're firing a liquid base that's compressed.
Wow. You know, I've once heard that somebody made the statement one time that whenever you drive a top fuel dragster on nitromethane, it's like a bomb. It's going to explode. It just depends if it's at the beginning or is it going to be at the end. And if you get a misfire, what happens then with that liquid?
Well, what happens is it's called, you drop in, it's called dropping a cylinder when you lose one cylinder, and then what you basically lost is between 800 and 1,000 horsepower in that cylinder, and your rod and piston is still going up and down, but it's going against liquid, and it'll break the rod generally. If at certain points, sometimes you can get away with it, but if it does early in the run, it's going to hurt a lot of parts, and everybody has. You know, I don't like to see it happen, but you know, they will hurt parts when they drop a cylinder, because sometimes they'll drop one, and then if it drops one, it'll drop another one, and then that's when you start breaking rods and breaking cranks.
Well, you know, we talked a whole lot about acceleration, Bruce, but how about trying to get this thing stopped? What does it take? Because I know some of these tracks really don't have that long of a shutdown. Just what does it take to get one of these babies stopped?
Sometimes it's just as much fun to stop the car as it is to get there. Because the tracks are short, you got to be on time on the parachute. In other words, you got to shut it off on time, and you got to get the parachutes out, and you got to get these cars stopped. And now we talked about G-force going down the track. It will carry a negative 4 Gs when both parachutes hit.
Okay. So your body really goes through a tremendous impact, because you're still on the plus G side as you're going through. Suddenly, when the chutes come out, it reverses and goes the other way on you.
All in under 5 seconds.
Yeah, that's a lot of times. If you ever notice that when one of the fuel drivers gets interviewed on the far end of the track right after they get out of the car, they're out of breath, and they act like they just run down there instead of riding down there. But so what it is the G force going down the track, and then the negative G force getting it stopped. Yeah, basically it does knock the breath out of you a little bit.
Wow, in other words, you almost get the wind knocked out of you whenever the chutes come out. And I noticed most of you guys are in pretty darn good shape, too. So that's got to be a brutal hit. Do you ever get bruises from your your shoulder harness and stuff?
Oh yeah. You get a few bruises on. There's spots in the car with, let's see, we've got a I've got so many seat belts now on me. I don't know. I can't tell you how many seat belts are gone. I think I got 11 points in the car that I'm strapped in. Three of them are on my helmet. So there's you're really tied in the car and getting in and out of the car. You get quite a few bruises. With all the straps on you.
Wow, being held in place 11 different places. Boy, how times have changed. Wow. And the thing, nobody wants to put a seatbelt on in their car. This is almost an art to get in one of these machines, strapped in.
It takes a couple guys to get you strapped in because there's no room in it either. So you got when I get in, I got two guys helping me get strapped in, and there's no way in the world I could ever get in this car by myself.
How about if you had to get out on the top end? Can you get yourself released pretty quickly?
Oh yeah, yeah. It all unsnaps pretty quickly. I pull two straps on my helmet that releases the R3 device on the back, and then I just twist the turnbuckle on the seat belts, and they all come hard. But you still got to get them back away, and then you can get out because these cars are pretty tight. My car's fairly tight. It's actually a little tighter than normal this year because we've added so much padding and so many more seat belts to it. But you can get out of it. And you can get out in a hurry, but, you know, it takes a lot longer to get it back up and buckle back in it, too.
So I think sometimes probably adrenaline helps assist you get out then, I would say, if you have to get out fast.
Yeah. Well, believe me, if you went around, you get out of the car pretty easy. If you lose around, you know, you're not near as agile when you come out.
I understand that. Well, I'll tell you what, Bruce, fascinating description on just what you do. Your wife is truly a sweetheart to allow you to come out there and do that just for her. Huh?
ain't you though? I love doing this, and I've done it, you know, most all my life, and I've got to race, you know, ever since I've been a kid. So it's pretty cool, and Carol's been there with me, so I love doing it. So it's in your blood, and you know how it is. Once this gets in your blood, it's hard to. Ever get it out of it.
Well, let me just touch base here real quick on one other thing. I know you're in the trailer sales business, but you're also a collector of cars, am I correct?
Yeah, I love old cars. My whole family, my father and all my brothers worked at Chevrolet at one time or another, and so I'm into muscle cars, mostly Chevy stuff, and I get a kick out of old cars and old trucks for that matter. I used an old Suburban to pull the race car at the racetrack, you know, to start it up at the start line and go down the return road and get it. But I get a kick out of the old cars, and I got a soft spot in my heart for old muscle cars.
Well, I'll tell you what, from one extreme to the other, from an old, what is that, about a 58 or a 57?
The Suburban I pulled was actually a 56.
Six model? Back in those years. That's a really super clean piece. So
thank you.
That really kind of makes a unique comparison when you sit alongside of a modern day 2007 top fuel dragster. What an extreme from probably 160 horsepower, 165 horsepower.
Yeah, you're about, that's about right. You know, I've had a lot of people come up and talk to me in the pit saying that they love the fuel cars and stuff, but they get a kick out of the old trucks just as much. And that's kind of neat because it's the way we used to live back in the old days, and before power steering and power brakes and air conditioning, all this other stuff. But
kind of like your fuel car, it doesn't have any of those things.
That's true, you know. And only difference with the fuel car is I got to work on it much more often than the old truck, you know. it has days too.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bruce. I asked you for 15 minutes of your time, and I've already taken 30 minutes of it. And I thought, I know Jack will agree, we have got to have you back again. I have so many more questions than what I ask, but I don't have time.
Well, actually, you know, I love, anytime you guys like to have me come back, just let me know, and I'd love to come on your show. And if anybody would like to look on the internet at and see some of our old stuff, some of the race cars and information about the race car stuff is at BruceLitton.com.
A lot of great information and a lot of good photos on BruceLitton.com. I was just spending some time on there while you guys are. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much. It's just always, it's been a joy always watching you, a joy talking with you. And I can't imagine what 2008 is going to bring. Hopefully it will bring you another championship.
Well, I appreciate it. We're going to do our best. And you know, I tell you what, it will be here before you know it. You know, we're getting ready to go through the holidays. And right after the holidays, testing begins. And then next thing you know, we're in the middle of the season. So time goes by pretty fast anymore.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the 2007 world champion, Bruce Litton.
Bruce, thanks, Bruce.
So much for coming on.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Take care, guy.
All right, Stevie.